Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, everybody. It's Annie here and...
Tobia.
And Anila.
Yeah, and welcome to the 3CR community on Saturday morning on Solidarity Breakfast.
Yeah,
it's one of those communities that anybody can join.
Yeah, and that everybody's welcome, I think, as well. And we have a great deal of collaboration with people from all around the world and indeed all around this continent as well. We'll be hearing from Vivian Langford's contribution later. Oh, no, not this week.
Oh, no, I actually pinched it and used it for Stick Together. Yeah. That was Arthur Roris. What a great guy he is from South Coast of New South Wales, going off and talking at the Sydney rally. And it's a very interesting point, the business about they'd been spending many years contributing to helping build a livable life for Palestinians. And of course, when the bombs fell, all that work that they contributed, and people from all over the world contributed to try and to help Palestinians have a better life, were destroyed by the bombs. You did a courageous thing this week. You actually sat and watched all of Netanyahu's press conferences in English as well as in Hebrew, and you came up with a fabulous analysis. Tell us all about it.
Do you have any brain cells left, Toby?
apparently not, because I watched all of Channel 10 and Channel 9's coverage immediately after. So.
Oh, no.
Well, you took a bullet. You fatigue. Took a bullet for yeah, us, yeah. So tell us about it. Tell us the outcome.
Well, the stuff that you see in all of the mainstream media reports is incredibly clipped. I think out of an incredibly deranged presentation, it had like PowerPoint slides that had don't believe Hamas lies and had pictures of starving babies with a big fake sticker on it. Out of all of that, most of the media only clipped this really last question from ABC correspondent Matthew Doran, where Netanyahu compares, like, well, what if Sydney or Melbourne was bombed? You know, surely you would... that they were actually being too nice with their bombing, Israel was, that the Australians, if they had that happen to them, they would consider what Israel was doing would be mild. That was in the English, but so that you only see the tiniest clip of that. If anyone watches the whole, even English press conference, it's bewildering that this person's even speaking. It's proper dictator-like talk stuff, like with no... Yeah.
Well, obviously, that's a great segue into talking about this week's announcement from Anthony Albanese that the Australian government is going to be recognising the Palestinian state.
In September.
Yeah. With conditions.
Yeah.
But yeah, what did you have to say about that today? Because I think you had some thoughts about whether or not that was a kind of meaningful step in the right direction.
It's whatever. I think it opens up. I think I've seen Channel 10. I've been keeping up on all the reports and Channel 10 and all these, like even A Current Affair had a really interesting interview with this guy called Simon Jackman, which is, he's a bit of a character, but he was saying on Current Affair that there's really not a possibility for a two-state solution, which is, I think, even just the fact that this is being talked about opens the door for so many more people to be
in the legacy media. Yeah, well, APAN put out a statement. APAN, Australian Palestinian...
Advocacy Network.
Australia's recognition of Palestine is a fantasy divorced from history. The Australian government's recognition of a Palestinian state has been condemned for clinging to a two-state solution and ignoring Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza and decades of entrenched occupation. Palestinian advocates had said it pursues a discredited Oslo-era plan designed to legitimise Israel colonisation of Palestinian land, not end it. APAN warned recognition is meaningless while Australia arms, trades with and shields Israel. Critics of the Australian recognition announcement has called instead for a just solution based on decolonisation, self-determination and the Palestinian rights of return. You had something you wanted to say?
Well, I think kind of across the week there's been quite a bit of coverage about whether or not this is meaningful, whether it doesn't go far enough in terms of actually making a real difference, and maybe something like sanctions or disinvesting from some of Australia's economic ties to Israel and things like that is a more kind of relevant step for the Australian government to take. And I mean, that seems pretty indisputable. But I think one of the things I think is really interesting is that I think that's kind of the point of this move. It's to throw people a bone and say, well, look, we're giving you this big kind of prize achievement for your big protest on Sydney Harbour Bridge. We're giving you something meaningful. And I think there is something meaningful to some degree about statehood and recognising the kind of legal rights of a Palestinian state. But I think the point of the move is that it's just enough that people can have an argument about whether it's meaningful or not and get bogged down in a debate over whether this goes far enough or it doesn't go far enough, instead of focusing on feeling entitled to wanting the Australian government to be.
I think it's called muddying the water.
Yeah, well, the important.
They should, I think it's a really great strategy for anyone who isn't already radicalized, as you're saying, Toby, to say, oh, well, look, the Australian government is doing something. Why are you still out on the streets making a fuss about it? Even though clearly there, you know, everyone making a fuss about this is very reasonably asking for the Australian government to respect the human rights of Palestinians who are clearly still going to be killed en masse, despite a recognition of Palestinian statehood.
Well, I think, like, if you even look at the Marco Rubio, the what's his position, the foreign affairs, whatever, in the US.
The envoy. Yeah.
The envoy, yeah. He was saying, he says it, like, the thing with this period of naked power is that they're actually just saying everything that they mean. And he said, but he's not afraid because he knows that obviously it was communicated with back channels, so it's not like it goes in the face, as it would seem, of American foreign policy. It doesn't. He said they're doing, as I understand it, his quote was that they're doing these moves in their respective countries, England, France, here, to shore up internal debates within the party. So obviously there's a lot of dissent somewhere in the Labour Party, and this is
Before we get on to that, it goes to the point that, as always, that actually people are dying. And Israel has killed over 270 journalists and media workers since it launched its war on Gaza. Al Jazeera journalist Anas al-Shafir and three of his colleagues were assassinated in a deliberate Israeli drone strike on their media tent outside Gaza's al-Shifa hospital earlier this week. This attack is part of Israel's ongoing carnage to silence reporting on its brutal siege and genocide in Gaza. Israel has killed more than 270 Palestinian journalists in Gaza and has banned international journalists from entering the territory.
And he was killed because he was previously warned because he was said to have affiliation to Hamas, but actually he was a member of the media communications team for the Hamas politically elected government.
That's right.
And
exactly.
So then now he was targeted for that, and him and his whole team was killed for that after Israel had threatened to do so.
Now let's go back to what you were talking about earlier, the report on the meeting that was held at Trades Hall. There was a meeting on Thursday night called by Trades Hall to discuss the issue of Palestine.
Give me 2 seconds. I'll pull up the statement. So this is a comment from someone that went to the meeting. I'll quote them now. Last night I went to a forum at Trades Hall on union organising for Palestine. A Labour Friends of Palestine member spoke on the panel and attacked Palestine Action Group, who organised the Harbour Bridge March, as, quoting, having a minority outlook and not orienting to the masses, end quote, because they don't let Labour MPs speak at rallies. How dare a member of the party that is currently arming Israel attack the group who organised 300,000 people to march across the bridge as minoritarian? What the bridge march proved is that orienting to the masses has nothing to do with appealing to Labour or letting right-wing politicians speak at your event. They got 300,000 people to march on the bridge, not by pandering to Labour, but by throwing down a gauntlet and directly challenging the Mins government. That inspired people. It drew them in to help win the fight. The Vic Trades Hall Council Acting Secretary, who's an important player in Labour, and the State Assistant AMWU Secretary also spoke. There was almost no mention by them of the actual situation in Gaza. Instead, both of them spoke to justify their inaction. They gave patronising rationales, i.e. we can't call demonstrations or walkouts because the members aren't ready. The members have to decide to take action, not the leadership, etc. They blamed rank-and-file workers for their own inaction and berated, patronised and at one point yelled at workers who proposed actions, e.g. an evening rally on September 10th, from the floor or raised criticisms. Two workers who are organising their workplace to walk out for Palestine asked if VTHC would support their action, pointing out that you're saying that the problem is members needing to act, but we are acting. Will you support us by putting out a statement in solidarity? The answer from the acting VTHC secretary was, quote, you're not going to like my answer, but the answer is no, end quote. The workers managed to get an informal motion passed by the meeting, not the officials, to support their walkout. These officials are happy to organise campaigns to get the vote out for Labour, but they refuse to initiate even an evening demonstration for Palestine. Equal marriage and change the rules showed the enormous scale of mobilisation that the Victorian Trades Hall Council can get when it does call out rallies. They could do this for Palestine. Where to now? August 24th is an important starting point. The more that it's a success, the more that there's a basis to show that unions taking action for Palestine is a good thing and is what they should be doing. It's positive that under pressure about calling a demonstration on September 10th, Victorian Trades Hall Council has announced a contingent to the 24th. From here, we need to do everything and anything we can to build the 24th on the ground and make it as big as possible. Our movement needs to keep striding forwards and keep orienting to drawing in masses of people. At the same time, we need to be politically clear about Labour's role in all of this and not pander to those in positions of power.
And I think it makes what you've kind of just read out makes it pretty clear that a lot of what's going on with the Labour government is essentially managing public opinion. And I think that's why it is so important for people to continue making a fuss and making it clear that they're not happy with the concessions that the government has made, because all of their behaviour has made it abundantly clear that they care deeply about the opinion the average Australian holds of the party. So I agree, make a fuss, because clearly they're trying to manage people's opinions away from the issue to avoid actual action and accountability.
Yeah, and it's a terrifying precedent. If you do look at those Netanyahu press conferences, you'll see that he's indicating taking over the last two what he deems safety control areas, i.e. Gaza City and the Mawasi refugee camp, which he created. That's the Mawasi refugee camp is an area of Gaza, of the Gaza Strip, that is all desert, and that's where all people were told to go. So the most barren, inhospitable
Yeah,
land.
Yeah, blood on hands, blood on hands.
And now he's pushing them effectively into the sea. There's no other way for them to go.
It's just an outrage.
Look, to not end on a negative note, I will say that we reported on the Phil F radio show on Wednesday as well that there is a whole flotilla leaving Sicily now as part of the Freedom Flotilla. And there's, I think, maybe 30 ships or something like that, a bit more, that are going to break the siege, all civilian vessels and fishing vessels alike.
I also think we can't move on without mentioning Israel's finance minister announcing this week that they are committing to approving 3,400 settlements in Palestine's occupied West Bank, saying that this will, quote, bury the idea of a Palestinian state. This move has been condemned by multiple international actors, the EU, for instance, and also the UN, sorry, as an illegal annexation of land under international law. So clearly, some of that
they're
international
running scared.
Pressure...
yeah. They're running scared. Perhaps we should move to our piece from the Melbourne rally with, or even the CSA to remind people about the 24.
Yeah, yeah. We'll listen to Nasser Mashni, but I'll play a song that... I think inspires this. It's called Everybody's Got a Right to Live.
Everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we all go down in jail. Everybody's got a right to live. On my way to Washington, feeling mighty sad, thinking about an income that I never had. Everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we all go down in jail. Everybody's got a right to live. Black man picked the cotton long time ago. He has been a victim since brought him to the show. Black man dug the ditches, hewed down the pine, gave his trouble to Jesus, kept on towing the line. Everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we all go down in jail. Everybody's got a right to live. Black man dug the pipeline, both night and day. Black man did the work, while the white man got the pay. Now look here, Congress, this is a brand new day. No more full-time work, no more part-time pay. Everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we all go down in jail. Everybody's got a right to live. Look here. I want my share of silver, I want my share of gold, want my share of justice, kill my dying soul. Black man picked the cotton long time ago. He's been a victim since brought him to the show. Everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we all go down in jail.
Now on to our last speaker. He's a man who needs no introduction. The president of APAN, a Palestinian man who has fought for justice and a free Palestine for decades. It is my honor to introduce Nasser Mashni.
Nice. Firstly, a big hand for Anim, hey? How good is our young women? One of the best things, I mean, there's only some small slivers of a silver lining post-October 7. There's only some small slivers. But the elevation of our Palestinian youth, and in particular our women. You know, I've said it a million times, and David Ben-Gurion and those old Zionists said that the old would die and the young would forget. Never. What they didn't know. Never, thank you. Never. It's very loud. That the old would die and the young would forget. What they didn't know was that the old were seeds, and we're seeing the seeds now, wherever it might be, not just here in Nam, but in Sydney and in everywhere in the world, whether it's the UK, US, and the movement globally, is led by our youth. So our job as elders, particularly Ummu Wahab and somebody who's a little bit younger, is just to hold the space for a little bit longer until these magnificent kids can lead us away. So congratulations, Renim and everyone. It's good to be home, my friends. It's very good to be home. And I say it's good to be home because nothing is as good as a Melbourne crowd. I can tell you I spoke in front of 200,000 people in London, but nothing's as good as Melbourne. Nothing's as good as Melbourne. There was 300,000, and I'll tell you there was more in Sydney. There was more than 300,000 in Sydney. I was at the front of the march, got to the end of the bridge and said to the lead copper, "What are we doing now?" And he said, "I don't know." I said, "Well, mate, you want to give back a couple of those stars or the stripes if you don't know what we're doing?" I said, "Is there an off-ramp ahead or an on-ramp? Can we turn around?" He goes, "I got no idea, mate." So it fell on the marshals and the people within the rally to decide what was going to be happening and what was going to be done, and that was to stop the rally and communicate to the back to tell them to go home. Now, the police reported 90,000 people. Let me tell you, at 3:20, when I called my friend after I told him it's going to be a big rally to be there at 12, and he's a Lebanese guy, and anybody that knows any Lebanese people, they run a different set of clock. Lebo time. Lebo time saw him arrive at the train station, like this one, at 1:20. 1 hour and 20 minutes late. He never got out of the train station. The escalator was clogged. The train deck was clogged. That train station isn't here. It's in fact past Flinders Street. It's 1.2 kilometres from the bridge. The bridge was full. 1.2 kilometres of street was full. Every train station was full. It was 300,000, 400,000, maybe 500,000 people. So I want you to know, when you're coming out every day, you are not only the very best of humanity, full of empathy, full of hope and belief for a better world, but you are representative of Australia. This is Australia, not Albo, not Penny, not Jacinta, not Minns, not any of those elected politicians. You are Australia. You are tomorrow, a hope for a better world where we're all equal, where we're being judged by the content of our character, not the colour of our skin, my brothers and sisters, yeah. By the content of our character. And it's in that space, and I want you to remember, it's so very important that we frame everything in an anti-colonial, anti-racist context. It's so very important. The foundations of this country are racist. When a white man came here and he said he was better than the black man, That genocide that started 250 years ago, that's still going on today, that got translated from that white man and then got used against the Chinese workers in the gold fields. And from there to the first waves of immigration, whether they be the Italians, the Greeks, the Lebos, the Sudanese, and whoever it might be, that institutional racism is enshrined. And our justice on this colony, but all over the world, has to be rooted in indigeneity. And here, it means that this always was and always will be. Always was, always will be. And for that, we have to fight to our brothers and sisters, our siblings, our black brothers and sisters and siblings. To you, you should know that our fight is your fight. Together, together we will be free from the river to the sea, and always was and always will be. You are all an inspiration, my friends. You're all an inspiration, and you should know how important these rallies are. And I've said it so many times, but it bears repeating for the people that are new. For the people that are new. And every day we are growing, and it's our job that we're here is to welcome them. Sure, many of them are late. Sure, we needed more from them earlier. Sure, we wish they said something earlier. But Palestine's not going to be free if we're perfect and we exclude. That's what Zionists do. Our job, we're a movement of love, of inclusion, of acceptance. They got here now, great, welcome them. What we have sometimes is an aversion and a hurt that it took so long, and because we might be, some of us, I mean, I'm perfect, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but we might be 10 out of 10 activists. And if somebody comes along and they might be a 5 or a 6 out of 10 activist, might not be all the way there. It's better that we add them to the movement, that our 10 and their 6 and we're 16, rather than to remove your 10 trying to fix their 4. Yeah? Let's all work together. when we work together for a common good in the spirit of humanity, in the spirit of solidarity, 1 + 1 = 3. And that's irrepressible, and that's how we make change. That's how we make change, my brothers and sisters. And in that spirit of understanding it's anti-colonial and anti-apartheid and anti-racist, it has to be inclusive, and especially to every affected community, however they might look, whoever they might be, however they might identify. Our Jewish brothers and sisters, our queer siblings, every one of you is welcome. Every one of you is part of this world that we're trying to build tomorrow. And when we say free Palestine, I mean, you know, the Zionists will tell you, oh, you didn't protest about Sudan, you don't protest about Congo, you don't protest about Ukraine, you only protest about Israel because you're anti-Semitic. Let's be clear, when we say free Palestine, we mean free Congo, we mean free Sudan, we mean free Tibet, we mean free Kashmir, free West Sahara, free Kanaki, free the world from your racism, your supremacy, your white hate. Free the world from Zionism. Free the world from Zionism. We're not going to get sucked into your hate narrative. We're not going to get sucked into this space where we're having to justify to you. You are on the wrong side of history, and history will account for you. History will account for you. You will not be able to post-date when you supported Palestine. You will not be able to say what you said and when you said it, it's been date stamped into the internet for eternity. We know your legacies won't be washed. And it's important that we make this message loud and clear to Penny and Elbow. To Penny and Elbow. Elbow wants to recognize. Penny yesterday said there'll be nothing left to recognize. Penny, there is nothing left to recognize except for the fact that you're too late and Israel is a genocidal, rogue, apartheid regime. That's what you need to recognize. You don't get to tell Palestinians who represents Palestinians. You don't get to tell us. That's not what self-determination looks like. Palestinians will decide who represents Palestinians. We're not copping your shit. Non-lethal parts. Non-lethal. Australia sends non-lethal parts. Shame. Shame, Penny. Shame, non-lethal parts. Let's be very clear. It wasn't an M16, it wasn't an Apache helicopter, it wasn't a submarine that devastated Gaza. It was F-35s that devastated Gaza. It was aeroplanes that devastated Gaza. It was the overwhelming air superiority of the Israeli genocidal air force. And we were not just complicit, we aided and abetted this genocide. There is no such thing as a non-lethal part. If we send door handles, stop sending door handles. It can't be too hard. It can't be too hard. Slovenia's done it. Brazil started to boycott them. Spain's did it. We don't have to be last, Penny. We don't have to be last. And Elbow, when 300, 400, 500,000 people marched across the Sydney Harbour Bridge, they didn't do it for recognition, mate. They didn't do it for recognition. Number one, we need to stop the genocide. Number two, we need accountability. Number three, we need the end of occupation. Number four, we need the end of apartheid. Number five, Palestinians return home. Number six, we'll decide what the solution is. 1, 2, 5 states and what it will be called. We'll decide that, not you, mate. We'll decide that. And let's be clear, Doc. Stop calling it a conflict. This is not a conflict. This is a one-sided genocide. This is assault on humanity. This is an assault on every sense of decency. This is an assault on any concept of international law or shared humanity. But we will hold them to account. You should know, and forgive me if you've heard this story before, but I've spoken at thousands of rallies in my life. As a 12-year-old, I spoke to a rally, and everybody in that rally I was related to. I'm not sure it needed the you're supposed to go, that was a little bit sad. It was my mum, my dad, my two brothers, and my late uncle. There were 6 people at that rally in 1982, and if you're old enough, you remember the chant, Reagan, Begin, you should know, we support the PLO. There were 6 people at that rally, because Palestine was you know, a very, very obscure thing, a very aside thing. But that, and I never dreamed, I got to tell you, I never dreamed that we would get this big. All over the world, every state, we'd close the harbour bridge, that we would have the Prime Minister bebopping and dodging. I don't know if anybody saw the Defence Minister this morning on Insiders, didn't know what to say. They've all got these practice lines, a space where they can speak. The Palestine movement today is massive. It's global, from here to the UK, to London, to New York, to all of Africa, Japan, everywhere all over the world. It's huge. But the really inspirational thing, the really inspirational thing is that this is the smallest it's ever going to be. Every day we get bigger. Every day more people come out. Every day more people understand that we're on the right side of history, that we're marching for justice, we're marching for humanity, that tomorrow Palestine's going to be free, and it's going to be because of every one of you, my friends. And you're not alone. I got a message from the people in Johannesburg. They're marching today when we wake up in Jakarta, Sao Paulo, Sydney now. No more not in our name, people are saying to governments everywhere. And increasingly it's starting to hurt. Increasingly it's starting to hurt. Scumbag Israel is feeling the pinch. It's feeling the pinch. It's feeling the pinch. That's why it behooves each and every one of us to boycott. To boycott. Don't buy that Starbucks shit. Don't go to McDonald's. Don't drink a Coke. You do your little bit and use that as an opportunity. When your friends say, meet me at Starbucks, say, I'm not buying that genocidal shit. If you can spend your money in there, you're not my friend. Hold them to account. And then speak to them. Make them understand why. Why we're not going to Zara. Why we're not going to buy Puma shoes. Why we won't buy a Hewlett Packard. And if there is a way for you to affect and impact the buying decisions at your work, at your club, wherever it might be, do that, my friends. It's so very, very important. Genocide is never complex. Starvation is not neutral. Starvation is not neutral. Silence isn't innocent. It's so important that you take these moments. These rallies are opportunities for you to feel that you're not alone, to get away from doom scrolling, to be re-energized by those around you, to know that we are right. They are wrong. Refill your batteries, recharge your batteries, because we need to keep fighting. That this fight, and at every level, at the institutional level, educational level, at the employment level, but particularly within the families and networks that we can impact ourselves, that we need to teach everybody how to boycott, we need to demand divestment, and we've got to insist that our government sanction. So wherever you are, my friends, wherever you are, where your kefir with pride, where your watermelon earrings with pride, your Palestine pins with pride, because you are the inspiration. You are the inspiration. You recharge each and every one of us every day. You tell this government to be held to account, and I can't tell you how many messages I get from Gaza. They can't believe that we're here every single week, 94 weeks in a row. Big round of applause to each and every one of you. 94 weeks in a row. There's a Hester petition over here somewhere. You might have seen the, there it is, that blue sign. Are you with Hester? Demand that they divest from genocide. Look up APAN and Super. Send an email through to your superannuation company to divest from companies that are complicit in the oppression and genocide of the Palestinians. If you're with Hester, go and sign that barcode. And during the week, the Thursday, the 14th of August, there's a Sanction Israel movement evening. Get along to that. Come and get this flyer Thursday evening. And remember, my friends, there's never been a better time for a free Palestine, and it starts today. And each and every one of you is a spark. I'm so very proud of each and every one of you. Thank you so very much. Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine! From the river to the sea! From the river to the sea! I'm loving this. One! Really loud. We've got to make everybody hear. One!
We are the
two!
We won't be silent.
Three!
Stop the bombing!
No, 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 no! One!
We are the people!
Two!
We won't be silent.
Three!
Stop the bombing!
No, 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 no! Thank you!
The war on Palestine has not stopped. Palestinians need self-determination. Gaza must be free of Israeli occupation forces, have unconditional access to aid and reconstruction. 17 years of Israeli siege must end.
The West Bank needs the violence and attacks by the Israeli army and settlers to stop, and an end to the occupation and apartheid.
Your support to end the war on Gaza to bring peace, justice and freedom to all of Palestine is needed more than ever.
Join the nationwide rally on Sunday, the 24th of August, 12 noon, outside the State Library Victoria on Swanson Street.
With Netanyahu and Trump threatening to ethnically cleanse Gaza and annex the West Bank, we all need to stand up and say no.
Nationwide rally, Sunday, 24th of August, midday at the State Library.
With your support, Palestine will be free, from the river to the sea.
Free Palestine Melbourne is a 3CR supporter.
Good morning, Mikhail. How are you?
How are you?
Yeah, great to talk to you. And we were reporting that the meeting at Victoria Trades Hall on Thursday weren't that as receptive to the notion that members of unions should be working out of work on the 10th of September, which is what you're aiming for, isn't it?
It is what we're aiming for. We hope so. They didn't really confirm anything. They suggested a few things, but that's definitely not confirmed. They spent most of the meeting saying why they couldn't. But we'll see what happens, and we'd love their support.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I was thinking about the Victoria Trades Hall calling that meeting. I was thinking you might have come late to the party, but it's everybody's welcome, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So where did the idea come for the stopping work 1 p.m. 10th of September?
Yeah, well, this is actually our second strike that my workmates and I from Inner Melbourne Community Legal are organising for Palestine. Our first was about 300 people from the CLC, Community Legal Centre and SACS, Social and Community Services sector, in February last year, and it was great. We released a statement which got about 600 signatures demanding, amongst other things, that our employers across the not-for-profit sector end their silence, show public support for Palestine, demand an end to Israel's bombing and blockade of Gaza, and the Australian government to cut all military and diplomatic ties with Israel. And ASU for Palestine were instrumental in this rank-and-file walkout. We've just got a pretty left-wing workplace, and we've built a culture where talking about the union is normal and included in team meetings. And we established a Friends of Palestine group off the back of a group of delegates fighting for our new multi-enterprise agreement we recently got off after 4 years, and it attracted other activists to our workplace who are also organising the strike and regularly attend rallies and community actions. And I guess the day after the 300,000-person march across the Sydney Harbour Bridge for Palestine, our Friends of Palestine group held a meeting and passed a motion to go on strike again and encourage other workers to do the same. And initially we thought to do something on the 8th of October, but then decided to try for something sooner because of the uptick in action and consciousness around Palestine lately. And we also luckily have a very supportive management who didn't penalise us last time and are supportive again now.
And so you're really saying that workers, I mean, well, as the meeting said, you know, members need to stand up and show their support for Palestine and their feelings against genocide.
Yeah, 100%. We hope we get a few more workers out this time than last time, and that that it's possible to stand up and walk off the job if possible, or at least attend to some of it in solidarity. And yeah, we want to send that message that we're sick of the government and weapons companies making money off killing a classroom of children a day, a child an hour for the last 2 years, and we want Australia to stop making and trading weapons, to sanction Israel, to stop the genocide, stop starving Gaza, cut all military and trade and diplomatic ties with Israel, and the occupation of Palestine, and uphold our right to protest without fear of repercussions and silencing. And, yeah, we hope to send a message that, you know, this it doesn't have to be like this. Another world's possible. We can't just remain silent while these Israel massacres and stars and ethnically cleansed Palestinians to profit and power. and that none of this should be accepted as normal. So we need a fight when our Defence Minister, Richard Miles, when asked when whether we sell weapons to Israel, says we're an F-35 country and backs Penny Wong's claim that we sell non-lethal weapon parts, including armour vehicles and F-35 aircraft doors, which of course are lethal, like all weapons parts are. And we can stop F-35 fighter jets from Australia. More than 700 critical parts are made in Victoria alone. Australia companies are the sole global supplier for some F-35 parts, and Australian companies have been paid about $5 billion for their F-35 contribution so far. We signed a $917 million contract last year with Elbit Systems. Of course, it would be best if companies globally stopped selling weapons to Israel. That would have to be
Business of standing up and actually walking out at 1 p.m. on the 10th of September. What's so powerful about this is that people individually, and then, of course, as the individual makes this decision, there's this collective. But individually, a person taking the moral stance and then feeling powerful enough individually to actually do something about it, and it's effective, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most effective ways you can take a stand. Using our power collectively as workers to say, no, we're not, this business as usual can't continue and it has to stop. And I think it's one of the most powerful ways we can take action when we work together. Yeah, as individuals, but individuals working together, workers working collectively to take action and say enough's enough. People are sick of it, especially now. It's important now because they've killed, it's killing nearly 100 people a day. They just killed all 5 Al Jazeera journalists left in Gaza this week because then they're going to lose less credibility killing them now than killing them because the horrors that are about to unfold.
The other thing is, of course, they can do this anywhere. The industrial military complex can decide to do this anywhere.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If they're threatening them there, we're threatened here too. And also the sort of, it's important now because of the 300,000 person march and Sydney Harbour Bridge and public sentiment's changing. People are starting to see that this isn't okay. And yeah, definitely, we're threatened here as well. And also the government's recent sort of plans to recognise Palestine as a state is kind of an insult. Amal Nasser has said recently, you can't recognise a state while you allow Australian-made components to help arm the regime destroying it. You can't fight for the dead or helping make the weapons that kill them. They don't really want to give Gaza any real autonomy or control over their border, trade, water, choice of leadership, ability to defend themselves. It's not really...
Well, as they said at the... in the crowd on one of the things that we were playing this morning, liars, liars, they're liars.
Yeah, and the reality that they're covering up is that globally there's been a massive union pushback. Port workers in Greece, port workers in Genova, have been shutting down weapons trades in their ports and in their cities in Morocco. So there is actually a big narrative that is missing from everyone's analysis, even though all this, two-state solution stuff's getting pumped out now. But really what the 300-person march signified to me was that, people aren't having it anymore. They're refusing to be lied to. And that's important that you guys are giving space to an action that actually everyone can partake in and everyone can organise in their
workplaces
and contribute to it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we urge everyone to come along, to talk to your workmates, encourage anyone who can to strike. Or if you can't strike, organise leave or take the day, the rest of the day off, take a long lunch break, see what you can do to get out there. And, we encourage people to hold a union meeting or a Friends of Palestine meeting and pass a motion to strike. And, Trace Hall and the other unions, they should support the action. They've refused so far. There's nothing kind of solid about...
They said it. If the members, if it comes from the groundswell of the members, it can't come from the bosses or of the union, it has to be the members.
Yeah, Yeah, that they said it, but they also said that they can't tell us what the next action is after we said this is what we're doing on the 10th of September. They said they can't. They said they'll, you know, check, like, call. They still haven't kind of confirmed. And they've given us all the excuses in the world on why they haven't done anything so far. 2 years into a genocide.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, they said, okay, yeah, they're going to come on the 24th.
Late to the party.
We've been going, yeah, we've been, exactly, everyone's welcome whenever they come, but, like, we've been going to rallies every week for almost 2 years, right? And sort of going to a rally on the 24th as a litmus test. What are they? What's the test? What are they? Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. So blue or red? Blue or red? Thanks for talking to us this morning, Mikkel.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This one's called War Isn't Murder. Thanks for having me, y'all. Thanks, David. Thanks, John. War isn't murder. Good men don't die. Children don't starve and all the women survive. War isn't murder. That's what they say. When you're fighting the devil, murder's okay. War isn't murder. They're called casualties. There ain't a veteran with a good night's sleep. Let's talk about dead people. I mean a dead people. The dead don't feel honor. They don't feel that brave. They don't feel events. They're lucky if they got graves. Call your dead mother, ask her when she died. It's a deathly silence on the other line. The dead don't talk, but the children don't forget. So in 20 short years you could live to regret that. War isn't murder, there's money at stake. Hell, even Kushner agrees it's good or real estate. War isn't murder, ask Netanyahu. He's got a psalm for that and a bomb for you. War isn't murder, it's an old desert faith. It's a nation state sanctioned righteous hate. Let's talk about dead people. I mean a dead people. If war isn't murder, it's the vengeance of God. If you can't see the bodies, they don't blow and they rot. And the flies don't swarm and the children don't cry. If war isn't murder, good men don't die. So in a short 20 years, when you vacation the strip, try not and think about the dead and have a nice trip. War isn't murder, we should all give thanks. I saw it on a movie, give it up for Tom Hanks. War isn't murder, they don't ship out the poor. And the bullets they fire ain't part of the cure. War isn't murder, land is a right. But the bank's called dibs, it's something you can't fight. Let's talk about dead people. I mean a dead people. The dead don't feel honor, they don't feel that brave. They don't feel events, they're lucky if they got graves. Call your dead mother, ask her when she died. It's a deathly silence on the other line. It's a dark sacrifice made on your behalf. So get down on your knees and thank the sweet Lord that war isn't murder. Thanks a lot, y'all. I appreciate it.
And that was the wonderful
Jesse Wells. That was him performing at a Farm Aid concert to raise funds for farmers. But that song's obviously about
the war. Yeah, well, it's obviously wars. Important to the farmers as well, because they're always sending their young folk off to war, you know, to save the free world.
That's right. They're taxing the farmers now rather than the billionaires, yeah? Even the farmers had a strike. Even, I mean, they had a rally out front of Parliament.
Yeah, yeah. They've suddenly realised that they're on the outside, not on the inside.
They
don't have a seat in the party anymore. On the 2nd of August, there was a rally, a very a good rally, actually, to save public housing. Very important issue at the moment, because the Victorian state government thinks that it wants to knock down 44 public housing towers. In fact, they want to bury public housing, effectively.
And they've started already in Fitzroy there, in Carlton.
Yep.
The towers are the better towers, the newer ones, are coming down.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the thing about it is that they don't have a genuine plan for where all these people are going to go. And they also have no actual understanding of why it's so important to have public housing. And this is, I'll give you a trigger warning, because this is one of the people...
one of the organisers
of the rally. She gives a speak out as to why her story, her personal story, which, and it is...
quite confronting.
Quite confronting.
And specifically talks about sexual assault.
Our next speaker is Ishtar, who's a trans woman who spent many years in insecure housing and living on the street, etc. So Ishtar, if you come up and tell us about it. Here we are.
Hi, my name is Ishtar Hope. I'm a homelessness activist, which is guided by my own experiences of homelessness and how a world where unconditional access to housing would have been able to prevent the trauma I faced due to my lack of access to a safe place to live. I'd like to give a content warning that what I'm about to talk about deals with themes of sexual violence. Growing up as a young trans woman in the 2010s, I was already at a disadvantage in the job market, and the only job that was willing to provide me with access to an income needed to survive was in the sex industry. Due to my unstable income and also discrimination against my identity and work, I had to resort to living at the brothel for several years during the late 2010s. When I lived at the brothel, I was forced to work long hours and accept clients that other sex workers were allowed to turn down under threat of losing the roof over my head and facing the elements as a rough sleeper, often in winter. While living in brothels, I was often made to sleep in places such as on a wet mattress in a room with no electricity while rain leaked through the roof, working through sickness and putting myself and other sex workers at risk. In 2019, after a particularly violent sexual assault that impacted my ability to work, I was kicked out of the brothel, leaving me open to further exploitation and falling prey to a domestic abuser who forced me to do even more exploitative forms of sex work under direct threats of murder. Caught between a rock and a hard place, between abuse and facing the harsh cold of life on the streets if I ran away. I am now free because of the kindness of community and because a trans woman in the community saw what was happening to me and offered me a couch to crash on so that I could escape and rebuild my life. But what happened to me should never happen to anyone. If the government invested in public housing rather than systematic neglect, someone like me could have avoided this trauma. I speak today not to change my past, but to demand that my past is not repeated. The right to a safe, stable, secure, and long-term shelter should be a basic human right, and we need to fight for it. This is a fight that I'm determined to give myself to. Community action, like the pickets — if anyone wants to get involved in the pickets, I'm happy to add you to the WhatsApp chat, by the way — organizing tenants, pulling every lever that we can, is our path forward. We must let our anger feed our hope that we can do better. We know that this mass displacement from the demolitions will only lead to more homelessness, more people suffering like I was made to. And I ask all of you today, will we let that happen? We end the cycle now and every day forward. No more homelessness by design. No more people freezing or dying on the street. No more abuse of the most vulnerable. This is a war, and it will take us fighting collectively. No one will save us but us. We will create the change we want to see. We will force the change we need to see in the world. Thank you, everyone.
Well, thank you, Ishtar. Ishtar just said we have to be right to be angry to feed our hope, and I think although there's a really, really fun, almost fun spirit here today in some senses, we do have every right to be angry about what's happening, because it is just a bloody disgrace, isn't it? That you tear down purposely good public housing to give it to the private sector and displace the most needy people in our society. That is an absolute disgrace. In fact, I'll mention here, the former Supreme Court Judge Kevin Bell wrote a little booklet a couple of years ago, maybe last year now, I think, in which he talked about Australia's obligations under international human rights, and that includes that governments have an obligation to provide housing for everybody, but it's an obligation the Australian government and our state government totally ignore, totally ignore.
This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share, it's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town. It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down at a future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong, or away from our communities and away from the services that we need?
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society.
3CR, here to stay.
3CR Community Radio, giving voice to the community since 1976.
A weak solidarity Bricky team listener went after 22 months of supporting the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation of Zion's right to defend itself when non-land, non-people it occupies illegally object to being terrorised after 77 years of terror and displacement, 22 months. True Blue Aussie decided maybe the non-land, non-people do have a right to be people with a land, as long as they don't want the country that used to be theirs in the first place before True Blue Aussie joined our very, very, very close friends in voting to cast them out. But then sometimes we wonder whether caring business class party supremo and would-be big supremos, Suss and Lees and Dregs, knows what she's talking about. Terrorists were applauding True Blue Aussie's decision, she said. But they weren't. Zion Supremo Benjamin Netanyahu and his Zion supporters here and there had nothing but severe criticism. Suss and check your facts before you open your mouth. Indeed, the Zion apologists were out in force, egged on, well reported responsibly, with his renowned objectivity by Lord Rupert of Wapping, screaming Wapping Sin P1, a win for Hamas. Jewish groups accuse PM of shocking betrayal after recognising Palestinian state. Inside, four pages of similar balanced coverage. More Wednesday. Nobody's happy at his Gaza decision. Thursday, P1 screamer again. Hero of Hamas. Terrorists cheer PM's courage. Courage in parentheses. Get the feeling, could be wrong, but get the feeling Lord Rupert and his editorial lackeys don't support the decision. And those, quote, Jewish groups accusing big supremo Anthony Albanese, we assume, don't include those many, many, many Jews who oppose Zion and the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation march every Sunday. And when I heard the shadowy minister were going overseas all the time and being a perfectly good little prefect, Michaela Kosh, the workers, repeating over and over the rewarding terrorism trope, my only thought was, I could understand it if Michaela's elocution teacher committed suicide. After stating he would bide his time on recognising a Palestinian state, and wish someone to tell us just where it's going to be, there was some silly suggestion Anthony had been forced to move by public pressure, public opinion, and a near revolt within the Socialist Party. But the Socialist commitment was evident as the great defenders of Zion's right to defend itself, to slaughter and starve the innocent, Anthony, the Minister for going overseas all the time, petty left wing, the Minister for being offensive and train killing, Richard Mall's the bad guys, he of the giant mind, even big economic guru Jim Chalmers Capital, all informed us they had been fighting for the non-land, and non-people all along. So obviously their 22-month campaign demonising the Sunday rallies as anti-Semitic hate fests was a brilliant tactic aimed at fooling the Zion supporters and their media into thinking it supported Zion, thus hiding its real intent. So words are words, Anthony, but of course you'll stop sending the Merchant of Death parts bombing the proverbial out of the non-land, non-peoples, non-land, and sanction the warmongers. Certainly not. There is no need. We do not send arms to Zion. Oh, and why should we and our very, very, very close friends determine who can and who can't govern a Palestinian state? Well, because they're proven, they can't be trusted to get it right. Right, okay, right. By the way, Anthony, does this mean Fatima Payman will be readmitted to your caucus? No, caucus will not condone people voting for party policy. In the which bit of that is not a surprise department, Sussan and Michaela told us a coalition government would not recognise a Palestinian state. Imagine how that must have upset the slaughtered, destructed, genocided and starved non-land, non-people terrorists. And in one of the most big-hearted and generous offers we've heard for a long time, Benjamin said the occupied non-land, non-people could become not occupied voluntarily by leaving, and he wouldn't stop them. And if they don't want to leave voluntarily, then they will leave involuntarily, confirming his big idea to pack them all off to Sudan, vying with Gaza in the starvation stakes. Not that it matters, because starvation is starvation. Not unrelated, as humans, perceiving ourselves as the apex predator, extend genocide to species after species with whom we share or used to share the planet, a cruel and unwarranted attack on one of our own. The Minister for doing all that to the environment, Murray Swatch the environment, accused, oh how unfair is life, accused by former Green Senator Bob Brown, note Brown, not Green, of being a corporate lackey. Murray Swatch the environment, a corporate lackey. Why, just this week, a Western Trooper was a resource pollution executive. In other words, a really important and responsible person praised Murray. His approach markedly different to his predecessor, Tania Plibersek. I think people appreciate his approach compared to Plibersek's, the very, very important executive eulogised. Our relationship with Plibersek broke down, he conceded. Any wonder? She wanted to establish a federal environment protection authority that would go some way to protecting the environment, which the great transnational resource polluters thought could make life a bit more difficult for them, backed by their socialist state supremo Roger Cook the planet. They saw Anthony muster all his well-known courage under fire and sink Plibersek. But this week, Murray was in Western Troubadour, was he, consulting with the great resource pollution giants and guaranteeing them and Roger his bill would strike a balance between their corporate interests and their corporate interests, would create an independent EPA other than giving the minister, i.e. Murray, the power to overrule it if they get it wrong, like oppose a resource development on flimsy grounds like environmental damage, and is considering preventing third parties like long-haired commie, greenie, wooden worker, iron environmentalist Bob Brown, for instance, and affected parties from taking legal action against corporate approvals. Thus, how could Bob Brown possibly see Murray as a corporate lackey? It is tragic, Brown claimed. Tragic? What nonsense. It is tragic that the big supremo has appointed a corporate lackey as environment supremo. We will take them on in the defence of many heirloom creatures they are pushing toward extinction, including, it seems, extinction of the right to oppose extinction. By the way, Bob did use the words environment supremo. Perhaps he's our listener. Murray also dropped into South Troubadour, was he, to enjoy the sight of algal blooming and marine life destruction, finally meeting a group of concerned marine scientists a mere 2 years after they raised their concerns and sought a meeting about the then looming problem with Tania, who, like Murray 6 months ago, also ignored them. Given they reckon climate change, if there is such a thing, could have a bit to do with it, we can be sure Murray will be reviewing his support for the fossil expansions, including those Western Troubadour Aussie fossils he also met. Interesting question. Which group will have the biggest influence on the minister for the environment? That's four. Despite the bloom killing tens of thousands of creatures and degrading an estimated 400 species, Murray says it does not qualify to be declared a national disaster, leaving the mind to boggle at how much worse it has to get. Oh, and he will expedite an expert assessment to understand whether any local flora and fauna need to be added to the threatened species list. Nothing like locking the stable door after. As the Witch Bank, which used to be our bank, announced a record $10.25 billion profit, what excitement and what benefits for all of us. And it's Supremo Matt by Commonwealth said he knew people are doing it tough. That is, other people are doing it tough. And what matter are you going to do about it? I've just done it. I admit I know people are doing it tough. As Matt joined the corporate sector, the very lifeblood of our economy, forget the blood of the working class, what would they know, in calling for the Socialist Talk Fest this week to address important issues like how the corporate sector can make even bigger killings, including, they say, light-touch regulations on AI, thus making a not-so-light-touch killing on the environment. And in one of the more perceptive observations, one corporate attendee hoped the talk fest would not get bogged down with the sundry participants all prosecuting their own agenda. Does anyone seriously think they won't? Good luck with that. But don't worry, listener, something tells me capitalism won't be under threat. Western Troubler Aussie to South Troubler Aussie, and now Perth to Canberra, as the Julie bash up the workers saga at ANU continues. Her Chancellor's office and staff in a Perth high-rise tower costing ANU a mint, and this week a board member telling a Senate inquiry Julie threw what the board member says were false accusations at her and then laughed and blocked her exit when she burst into tears, telling the inquiry she became suicidal and had a miscarriage. Nothing funny in this item, as Green Senator Maureen Perugi told the woman, Dr. Liz Allen, there is no other pathway but for Julie and her co-conspirator Vice-Chancellor Genevieve Bell to resign. Just the level of trauma, intimidation, bullying and gaslighting that you have been put through is unbearable, she said. But at least Julie gets marks for consistency. And more cuts. The music school this week announced it will abandon its highly regarded teaching of instruments, of actually playing music. Know all about it, but can't play it. Brilliant. In the apropos of nothing department, there's a telly ad with a bloke telling us how much we'll save on insurance if we shop around. And another ad where the same bloke tells us lucky we're insured with a different company. Oh dear. Well, were it real life, at least he could double up on being told his policy doesn't cover whatever he's claiming for. You should have read the small print. Meanwhile, US of the UN, of the US of the world, big supremo Donald Trample the Paw, has sent the National Guard in to save Washington. Great satirist Tom Lehrer, who died last week, wrote the wonderful Send in the Marines as the solution to all problems. Well, this is Donald's version, cleaning up crime. Although his claims it is out of control don't accord with the actual falling crime rate, showing yet another statistician should get the chop. As the Don contemplates sending the National Guard into lots of Democrat-majority cities, knowing they are all rife with crime and homelessness. And he said he would solve the homeless problem with his renowned compassion. The homeless have to move out immediately. Immediately. Sweep them off the streets. That immediately, by the way, in huge capitals. Sweep them off the streets to wind up, well, what's it matter, where they wind up. At least they're not polluting the crime-ridden streets. As finally, he promised, there will be no more Mr. Nice Guy. Also in big capitals, no Mr. Nice Guy. We want our capital back. Didn't say from where, but no Mr. Nice Guy. Just when we were warming to his intelligence, compassion and humility. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Kevin, I've got a note quickly just before about Mikhail Evans was saying about how you could get involved. You can also join them. They're leafleting every Sunday rally. She's made a statement saying that you're more than welcome to join them. There's a banner there that you can find them at, and that she encourages you to go to CLC Workers United or ASU for Palestine Vic on Instagram. to find out how you can help more. And on the line, we have renowned guest of the show, Don Sutherland. How are you this morning?
G'day, Tamar. Bill, greetings to all listeners.
Hello, Don. Before we get started, we'll just introduce what we're talking about today. So coming up next week, Treasurer Jim Chalmers is set to host his three-day economic reform roundtable, previously known as the Productivity Summit. It's had a rebrand in Canberra from August the 19th to the 21st. So that's going to be a meeting of leaders from business, unions, civil society, government and other experts to discuss three main themes: resilience, productivity and budget sustainability and tax reform. So ready to hear your thoughts, Don.
Well, they are many, but let's just take as a starting point, because it is a very important issue. What is essentially going on is that the Labor government, because it is in its own way a competent government, is looking for endorsement of a broader and in some ways different approach to managing the major problems that we all face day to day relative to what happened in the election. So it went to the election with a very modest program. And the essence of the issue is that they do know that that very modest program is not going to solve those major problems over the life of the next two governments. Now, we're likely to have a Labor government for 6 and maybe 9 years. That means that they know that they are directly responsible, to the extent that government is, in managing the dynamics of this rotten system. They don't define it as rotten, of course.
Don, maybe you could explain a little bit about what some of these like really quite deep-rooted economic problems that the government is trying to address with reform.
Well, there, yes, happily. This is really important. There are three major ones, and there's two others that spin off. Firstly, there is the living standards, a distribution of wealth, production of wealth dimension of the problems. The global situation and the specific Australian situation is a story of stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not likely, there is no sign that that is going to change of its own accord. And that means downward pressure on living standards for the 90%. The second dimension, which is also economic, is the ecological dimension. Not just climate change, but desperately climate change is redefining life as we know it. And that has very serious implications for when I think about it, you know, the next generations that flow on from my life, that it's going to be a desperately difficult life at some point or another. And the government knows this.
Mm-hmm.
The third aspect is the warmongering solution, which is becoming necessary, although profoundly wrong, because in all of its complications and contradictions, China is providing the clues of a serious alternative to the momentum of barbarism.
And one of the biggest clues of that kind of emerging is progress with the BRICS. So Brazil, Russia, India and China progressing with their own currency, so moving away from the US dollar, which is obviously pretty big shift away from kind of post-World War II economic hegemony of the US. Just to touch on one of your previous points about the environment, obviously one of the biggest reasons why environmental issues are economic issues is because the resources that are available are going to be available at a global level, but also for Australians are going to change completely. Can you talk a little bit about the current approach Labor and their Environment Minister, Murray Watt, are taking to some of these resource questions?
Well, this is a very interesting shift, isn't it, from putting Watt in charge. Now, he's defined as a problem solver from the point of view of a government that has inherited a lot of problems. A lot of the problems that Labor is dealing with are not of their own making. Even though they've been in government for 3 years, they go back and they've been developed by the gross incompetence of Liberal governments. However, so the problem that the employers are taking to the round table is that they say that productivity is impeded by too much green and red tape.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly they see Watt, Murray Watt, as a minister who is willing to solve that problem in their interests.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just kind of chomping at the bit to make this point. I think so much of this issue is really about Labor needing to manage the Western Australian branch of the party. They obviously had a kind of landslide majority win in Western Australia, and that's a really big part of their majority in government right now. And Western Australia and the mining industry's grip on the Labor Party there is in direct conflict with some of this desire for environmental legislation and reform. So I would love to hear your thoughts about how the Albanese government is trying to manage the kind of split interests of the Western Australian branch of the Labor Party and the Southeast branches of the Labor Party.
Well, I think the I don't think there is a huge split. What you're saying about one of the distinctive features of the Western Australian branch is, of course, the dominance of mining corporation interests.
Mm-hmm.
In how Labor government governs in WA. But big capital has got its tentacles well and truly wrapped into the South Australian government,
mm-hmm.
and to Labor in Queensland.
That's the truth.
Sorry, just to clarify, I'm talking more about the kind of East Coast Labor membership being pretty on board with environmental reform and moving forward on climate, and then you've got other parts of the country that are really, well, essentially in the back pocket of the mining industry.
I don't want to get bogged in a deep discussion about what's going on in the Labor Party, but it's certainly true that there is a terrific effort being put in by many Labor Party sub-branch people through organisations within the Labor Party, like the Labor Environmental Action Network, to take on this governance that produces extra exploitation of nature along with people that is beckoning at the present time. That's very true. And I'm not sure how deep that goes in Western Australia. I'm not close enough to the situation to make a sensible comment about it.
Don, one of the things that's interesting, because we are coming to the end of this because we have limited time, but, you know, going back to Paul Keating's adage, you don't call a meeting unless you know exactly what the outcomes are going to be. What do you think that their outcomes are going to be with this meeting?
Well, I think their primary effort is to get a national-level endorsement of reforms, in inverted commas, that go beyond what they took to the election. They're not going to rush through those. They're going to work their way through them, but they're seeking to build it up. And interestingly, they're not just doing it at the national level. There are these roundtables happening at departmental level, run by ministers, but also at the electorate level. In the seat of Braddon, neighbour of mine in Tasmania, there was an economic roundtable last week. So they're taking it into the community and they're seeking to get, I'll use that word, that hegemonic endorsement or acceptance of solutions that favour big business. because that's where the problem is. In essence, the round table's real agenda, the hidden agenda, is profitability, not productivity. And you can read about that at my... I've written two blogs on that, and that's available at my Substack page.
Sorry to interrupt, Don, but I think that's a great segue to kind of call back to one of your previous points about slimming down the red and green tape and that being such an important move towards increasing, as you say, profitability. And there's obviously been a lot of signalling from Murray Watt and also Jim Chalmers around delivering faster approvals for projects. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about, just to finish up, you could talk about the way that the government and the Productivity Commission is trying to balance.
I don't think they are trying to balance. I mean, you're in Tasmania, and Murray Watt's just waded in and says that, oh no, it's okay to have the salmon industry polluting the waters down there and killing off the skate. So, I mean, really, they're not trying to balance it, are they?
No, I don't think they are. But what they are trying to do is demonstrate a level of competence and know-how, which I think they do have. And then secondly, I don't agree with that, the character of it, but I do think they have it. And then secondly, to get endorsement for solutions that are going to solve the problem of profitability in the guise of tackling productivity.
Yeah.
Now, the real question with respect is that is what do we on the left do about all of this? And there's four or five key points there we have no time for. But one of them must be we must develop our own alternative economic and ecological program. Mm-hmm. And I think the model that is worth paying attention to, I think there are two, actually, to conceive how that can be done, is firstly the way in which the our Aboriginal organisations worked through deep level, local level consultations leading up to the Uluru Convention several years ago. That just wasn't a Uluru conference. It was a process leading up to it that was profound in how it sought to engage and teach at the same time communities at a deep level. Now, conceptually, that's how we should begin to produce a synthesized program alternative to what the government is offering. And I think that's a 3 to 4 year project, 5 year project, I don't know. But that's the orientation for our work. The alternative is sort of there, but is in atomized bits and pieces. We need to get it brought into a more complete and synthesized expression of the priorities of the majority.
So what you're saying is don't be reactive, be proactive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Don't just whinge about what Labor is doing, because in principle, some aspects of what Labor is doing, we would do if we were in government.
Mm.
But we would do it very differently, I would hope.
Well, we'll have to end it there, but we'll put a link to your Solidarity Dynamics page so people can explore some of the things that you're talking to us about.
Yes, well, there'll be more coming as well about the taxation element, and also, of course, I will elaborate on this sort of a strategy to develop a people's program.
Great. Well, we'll talk more about that next time we speak to you in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks very much for talking to us today, Don.
Great to talk with the gang of three.
See you, Don.
All the best. Bye.
And that's the end of the program, but we've got a couple of announcements. What you want to tell listeners, Anila?
Following up from our interview a couple of weeks ago with Stop Woodside Monash, they've got their, quote, fossil-free Monash Forum this Wednesday, the 20th, from 12 to 2 p.m. So come along to that if you'd like to help them kick fossil fuels off campus.
That's a really good idea. There's also a really interesting art exhibition.
Yeah, a lino cut exhibition by Miguel Andres Villanueva at Black Dot Gallery. That's 33 Saxon Street, Brunswick. On until the 31st of August. It's free and it's wheelchair accessible, and it's lino cuts on the working class. So you can see a range of amazing lino cuts about people doing the work that is required to make society run.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. There's the End Overdose event that's going to be held at Collingwood Yards 2 to 4pm Friday the 29th of August. So you could put that in your calendar. There's lots of things happening.
Yeah, there'll be free entertainment. From Resident Frequency, speeches and Food Not Bombs will be there as well.
Yep, and of course there's the Sunday rally for Palestine tomorrow. There's going to be the big one on the 24th of August. If you're part of the union movement, you can go meet outside Trades Hall and they'll be going down. There's also join workers stopping work earlier than that on 1 p.m. 10th of September to demand Australia end its complicity in Israel's genocide in Gaza. You can do that by trying to pass a motion in your workplace and encourage other workers to do the same, or you can just do it yourself, right? You can just do it yourself. We should doff our hat to the passing of a great political voice. Tom Lehrer died. He reached his 90th decade, so he was in his 90s, so a clean living, clear-minded fella. So we're going to go out with a song by him. Kevin doffed his hat to him in his This Is the Week That Was and mentioned it by name. Call in the Marines, Send in the Marines, which is appears to be Don Trump's method to make sure that everybody forgets his connection to Epstein and sexual exploitation of young people. So here we go.
When someone makes a move of which we don't approve, who is it that always intervenes? UN and OAS, they have their place, I guess. But first, send the Marines. We'll send them all we've got. John Wayne and Randolph Scott. Remember those exciting fighting scenes? To the shores of Tripoli, but not to Mississippi. What do? We send the Marines. For might makes right. Until they've seen the light, they've got to be protected, all their rights respected, till somebody we like can be elected. Members of the Corps all hate the thought of war. They'd rather kill them off by peaceful means. Stop calling it aggression. Ooh, we hate that expression. We only want the world to know that we support the status quo. They love us everywhere we go. So when in doubt, send the Marines.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.